My name is Nick Miller, and I'm an attorney in the Investment Management Group at Stewart & Kissel. Thank you for listening in today. This is our fifth episode of our ESG Spotlight series. Today's discussion will focus on the recent SEC risk alert related to ESG. We'll be discussing the content of the risk alert, key takeaways for asset managers, and observations regarding potential future enforcement actions. Before doing so, I'd like to introduce a few of my colleagues who will be joining the conversation. We have Pat Palenko, partner and co-head of the Investment Management Group, Debbie Franzese, partner in the Investment Management Group and head of our ESG task force at Stewart & Kissel, and Philip Moustakis, counsel in our litigation group and formerly with the SEC Division of Enforcement. Let's jump in. Pat, this first one is for you, and this is a basic question to start off. What is a risk alert? How do these come about, and how should market participants generally think about these?
Thanks, Nick. So a risk alert is a communication from the SEC's examination division that has no legal force, but provides details about what the exam division considers to be a priority area. Typically, risk alerts will spotlight findings in recent exams, also identify trends of consistent deficiencies that the division has identified in exams, and also highlights typically what are considered to be good practices. I think the SEC and the exam division consider risk alerts to be useful tools to industry participants. And we consistently advise clients to pay close attention to risk alerts. I think really you ignore them at your peril. Whether you agree with what the SEC is identifying as an issue or not, risk alerts are often followed by sweep exams and enforcement activity. And we really view them as a roadmap for the industry and our clients, for asset managers of all types.
Yeah, that's very helpful. I think that's exactly right. So in terms of this particular risk alert focused on ESG, what would you say prompted this?
Well, the SEC has been very, very public about its focus on ESG. And I view this risk alert as a continuation of that. And this is at the commissioner level and the exam division level. In 2020 and 2021, ESG was included in the division's examination priorities. And ESG has been highlighted by SEC commissioners and more recently by Chair Gensler on numerous occasions, identifying it as a priority area in a lot of different markets within the financial industry. By its terms, the examination division indicated that the risk alert was prompted by what they see as the significant growth in investor and client interest and demand for ESG, an increased number of ESG products and services, a lack of standards and definitions within our markets as to what ESG actually is. And the exam division identified the possibility of investor confusion. And I think when you put that all together, that's really what prompted this.
In terms of the risk alert itself, Debbie, can you speak to the staff's observations?
Yeah, sure. So there's really a few that they've covered in this risk alert. And so I would say, you know, there's probably kind of some broad categories. The first one really is the focus on adequacy of disclosure that managers have about their ESG policies and procedures and their actual practices in relation to ESG, including in the investment process. And then, you know, they've given some more specific types of examples about some deficiencies that they found in connection with some managers. And then they also very helpfully did note some observations that they had of more effective practices that some managers had. And we'll just highlight, you know, a few that I think are, you know, probably most relevant to some of our clients. And I think one of the big points is really focusing on the fact that your portfolio management practices are really consistent with your disclosure. Sometimes there can be a tendency to maybe overpromise in marketing materials or during due diligence meetings, because this tends to be a focus area of investors. And then there isn't always the backup on the investment side as to exactly how the managers are doing due diligence of portfolio companies, and really most importantly, how they're also documenting that they are doing this. Another area where we've seen this in the SEC highlighted this is proxy voting. Again, there may be some broad statements that a manager is reviewing ESG related proxy materials and thinking about how they're incorporating ESG when they're voting. And then the SEC found that many internal guidelines then really didn't provide for this case by case analysis. So, you know, we've discussed this issue with clients as well, where, you know, sometimes there may be a general policy to vote with management, and obviously on some ESG related issues that may not be appropriate. And if clients are really thinking about ESG considerations, they may need to break from maybe more that general practice that they may have in connection with other proxy voting. There have been some things that the SEC mentioned, which I think also come up a lot with clients in connection with really thinking about your adherence to different global standards. So just to give some context for what I mean with that, there is no real definition of ESG and what that means, but there are a variety of ESG frameworks that are recognized. So for example, people may be familiar with UNPRI, which is the Principles for Responsible Investment. They basically are six principles that investment managers can, you know, sign on to, and they have a global really signatory base, and they are very broad principles, and there can be a variety of ways that you can comply with them, but the key is that you really do need to have a good faith basis for complying with each of those types of principles. Another one that has, you know, recently gotten some additional press is the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative, where there's a number of signatories. And this is another one where there is kind of a broad statement that a signatory is committing to support the goal of net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 or sometime sooner. But when you kind of go beyond that, there really are very specific commitments that managers are saying that they're going to adhere to, and really talking about, you know, how they're going to take into account, you know, companies' emissions and the companies that they invest with, you know, setting kind of interim target for proportions of assets that they're managing in line with this attainment of net zero, and different things like that. So the SEC did focus on this, where they've said that if you do say that you are going to adhere to one of these global standards, you really need to have the backup to show exactly how you're doing it. And I think that's kind of a common theme in this risk alert, where they're really saying it's not enough to just make these broad statements or really even just to have policies and procedures. You really need to show the documentation that you're backing that up. And I would say that's not familiar to investment managers. This is something that the SEC focuses on in a lot of different areas, but it can be something that comes up in ESG in particular, just because there are no real, you know, definitions, and a manager really needs to think about how it's going to work for their process. The last thing that I'll highlight are just some things that they found to be effective practices. And I think this, you know, should give managers some, you know, comfort in the sense that they were saying that when you have simple and clear disclosure about your approach to ESG, that they found to be, you know, something that they did view as effective. So you don't need to, you know, kind of have what maybe people view as, you know, a dedicated ESG group and someone that is really, you know, focused on all of these issues. What you can do is define what ESG means for your firm and how you're going to implement it, and then make sure that you have the policies and procedures to back it up. But they're not, you know, going so far as to prescribe any particular way that you need to, you know, think about ESG or disclose it or things like that. And so, you know, they've also found that if you have compliance personnel that's knowledgeable about the firm's ESG related practices, that generally tends to, you know, provide for a more comprehensive program. I think this shows, you know, the ability of the compliance and regulatory and legal team within a firm to really work with the portfolio management team and the analysts to really understand how they think about these issues from an investing perspective, so that then you can really design policies and procedures that are going to be effective for your firm, and then also ones that are going to work for both, you know, the size of the firm and just the culture within the firm.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. And I think it sounds to me like one of the big takeaways here is that, you know, to the extent that you're doing this, this really is something that, you know, might get tested. And if the SEC comes in, you really need to be able to back this up. And I think to that end, Pat, you had mentioned before that often risk alerts precede sweep examinations. And so maybe you and Debbie can speak a little bit to how the staff approaches ESG in the examination context. And so, you know, what should clients expect in this regard? And really, how does the risk alert play into all of this?
Yeah, and Pat, I know that we've seen this in a number of recent examinations for advisors. And I guess one point to note there, before we talk a little bit more about what the actual requests are, is that this can apply to managers both who have dedicated ESG strategies and then managers that have a business where they don't necessarily specifically have an ESG dedicated fund, but do have in their marketing materials that, you know, they do take ESG into consideration in the investment process. So Pat, I don't know if you want to talk about some of the things that we've seen the SEC ask about in kind of ordinary course exams as opposed to the sweep we talked about earlier?
Sure, yeah. So we've noticed over, I'd say, the past 4 or 5 months, some very specific request items dealing with ESG in just general exams. Doesn't look like it was particularly targeted to ESG. That was just a one of the focused areas. The request items often include a description of how ESG or SRI terms are defined internally by the client, a request for a list and description of ESG and SRI criteria, copies of policies and procedures that might relate to ESG, whether the registrant adheres to any ESG or SRI industry standards, like what Debbie just described, a minute or two ago, the UNPRI, Equator Principles, et cetera. And if so, written documentation of the registrant's consideration of the standard in its investment selection, portfolio management processes, and proxy voting practices. Whether the registrant uses a third party or proprietary scoring system. Also, issuer communications relating to ESG. So what types of communications are there between the registrant and the portfolio companies relating to the portfolio companies' ESG practices and disclosures? Investments for identify investments for which ESG SRI criteria were a determinative factor, and then side letters regarding ESG or SRI issues. That's just a basic list of what we've seen in recent exam requests.
Yeah, and I think just to follow up on that, I mean, I think there are some things that managers can do in order to prepare for the exam. If you know that these are the types of things that they're focused on, you can really focus on making sure that you have some of that documentation done in advance and that people are doing it simultaneously. So one thing that I've discussed with a number of managers is thinking about, you know, to the extent that they maybe have investment memos that their analyst or portfolio manager prepares in general in connection with different investments, they may, you know, maybe be just considering ESG factors in a section that maybe they're thinking about as risk management or kind of overall. And what you can do kind of instead is you can take out those kind of ESG related considerations and put them in a separate section of the memo. If you talk about then those things at say investment committee meetings or you have minutes or things like that, again, you can kind of break out those sections so that if the SEC asks for more specific examples of how you're complying with your policies and procedures, then you're ready to go and you already have that material done. Similarly, you know, if you have signed on to something like UNPRI and you have backup documentation as to how you in good faith are complying with those different principles. And like I said, there's a number of different ways to do that. But knowing that they're going to ask about those things, you know, and if you have a proprietary scoring or you're using a third party, really thinking about how you did the due diligence on them, how you incorporate those scores into your actual investment, you know, thesis and investment research process. Are those scores determinative? Are they one of many factors? And those are some things that you may cover in your overall ESG related policy, but it's more important to kind of have some of that documentation so that that way, if you do have an SEC exam, you're really prepared and you're not kind of scrambling to kind of pull together here and there materials that may not necessarily show that you have really a basis for a lot of these statements that you've made.
So it seems to me, I mean, obviously there's a lot here of value. Pat, what would you say is the biggest takeaway for your clients?
I think the biggest takeaway is what Debbie and I consistently advise clients to do, which is say what you do, do what you say, and document it. And that is not unique to ESG. It really goes to the essence of many, many parts of a registered advisor's compliance program, but that's very important. Also, to the extent that you have ESG policies or you use ESG factors in your investment process, and most importantly, if your marketing materials indicate that you do so, you really need policies and practices that are clearly and consistently disclosed. And this is across all of your, to the extent you're a private fund manager, your fund documents, your disclosure documents, your ADV, DDQs, marketing materials, side letters. You need to be consistent in the way that you're disclosing what you do in ESG, and it needs to be very integrated within the firm. And then the third point I would make is that advisors should really work backwards based on what the SEC staff is looking at and what they may request. The whole point here is they've told us, they've given us a roadmap in the risk alert. This is what is a priority to them. This is what they care about and they think is important. Think about your business in that context and work backwards. Make sure that if you say you're doing something, really do it. You have controls in place to monitor whether you do it and make sure that it all works within the context of your firm. We're not saying that every firm has to have an internal ESG committee, you know, with regular meetings and minutes. It just has to be, however it's integrated into your process in your firm, you need to be able to demonstrate that you're doing that. Mm.
Very helpful. And I think, Debbie, I just want to circle back very quickly to one of the points you had mentioned earlier in terms of applicability and who should really be focused on this. So what about clients who don't offer an ESG product, but are, you know, either getting questions from allocators about ESG policies or procedures, you know, or other inquiries? How are you advising these types of clients in light of the risk alert?
Yeah, so I think here, you know, and this is a point that, you know, I think we've made, you know, a few times during this, but it's really going to be applicable to really any SEC registered advisor, not just those who have dedicated ESG products. Obviously, if you do have a dedicated ESG product, you know, whether that is a registered fund or a registered product or a private fund or SMA or something like that, then there's probably going to be increased scrutiny right on the disclosure that you have to your investors, and they SEC may expect you to have even more detailed policies and procedures in the context of those types of vehicles. But this is really going to apply to really anyone that is making any types of statements regarding ESG, whether that's in a DDQ, whether that's in an RFP, whether that's in a side letter where you've committed to investors that you're going to consider these types of factors in your investment process, right? The SEC, you know, will ask for those types of side letters, and then they will ask, you know, how you actually are complying with it. And again, you're going to need to have some kind of documentation about that. And so it's really, you know, I think particularly because investors are so focused on this as well, it's going to be, you know, really important, I think, for most every firm out there, because there's likely that there is some statement you've made, whether it's affirmatively or in response to a request from an investor, including maybe in response to RFPs or due diligence questionnaires or kind of ODD questionnaires that they may send you on a quarterly or annual basis. Those are all statements that then you're going to have to back up both with your policies and procedures and then the documentation that you have day to day, you know, usually most particularly in relation to the investment process, in relation to proxy voting in connection with, you know, communications with management. And one thing to note there is that, you know, it doesn't necessarily, sometimes people think about communications with management and they focused on kind of so-called activist investors that are out there maybe making, you know, proxy voting recommendations or board recommendations or shareholder proposals. And you don't have to do that, right? It can be that during your normal kind of due diligence process in relation to an investment, your, you know, kind of engagement with management is that you speak to their IR team and in connection with a number of issues that you may ask about, ESG related issues are included in that list. And so that is one way that a manager can think about, you know, kind of implementing ESG considerations into a process that they already have. And that's really where a lot of our managers will start. They'll start thinking about some things that they're already doing, which they may do for risk management or overall kind of just shareholder value purposes in connection with being a long-term investor in a company, and then thinking about ways that they can, you know, kind of maybe beef up that process a little bit. And then you kind of can start from there and think about the policies and procedures that work for your firm, the ones that are really tailored to your business, the types of issuers that you're investing in, the geographies. And obviously, if you have a private equity business where maybe you're going to take a more active role in management or you're going to be taking a larger stake in a company, particularly if it's an early stage company, you may have, you know, different ability to influence management than if you're a hedge fund and you have, you know, a small position and it's a publicly traded company. And so there's going to be different things that again is going to need to involve multiple people within the organization in order to make sure that you have something that works for you. I think we've highlighted some things that the SEC is focused on and, you know, you need to make sure that you really are aware of them and complying with that, but you also need to then make sure that you have a policy that everyone's going to be able to follow. I always tell clients the worst thing to have is a really great policy that you don't follow because it's just not going to work for your organization. Like if the analysts never write investment memos and they don't do a lot of documentation, you then don't want to tell them that they need to document all their ESG criteria because the odds of that happening are probably not going to be very high. And so it's really going to be something where managers need to think about what's feasible for their organization, both in, you know, developing the policies, and then, you know, it flows into making sure that then their disclosure is accurate based on what they actually are doing. And then, of course, if they have signed on to any of these, you know, global reporting standards, making sure, again, that they have a real good faith basis for how they're complying with that.
That's great. So look, so far we've been discussing, you know, the risk alert and normal course examinations, and hopefully that's where this ends. But I would like to transition a little bit now and bring in Philip Moustakis and discuss the possibility of enforcement. So Philip, you spent time in the enforcement division at the SEC. In your experience, at what point do deficiencies get referred to enforcement?
Well, as a general matter, the enforcement staff does not get involved until a formal referral is made by the exam staff. That's usually after the manager has had an opportunity to respond to the deficiency letter issued by the exam staff. However, depending on the nature or seriousness of an issue, the exam staff may confer with enforcement colleagues on an informal basis. You have to remember these folks sit next to each other. They work together repeatedly on matters. And that could happen while the exam is ongoing. So there could be a little back and forth prior to the deficiency letter, prior to the formal referral. As I often say, there's a thin line between exam and enforcement. In this context, it's also worth noting that the Division of Examinations ESG Risk Alert really serves to inoculate the enforcement staff against accusations of regulation by enforcement, at least in their view, right? And that's one of the reasons the risk alerts issued by the Division of Examinations have always been important to the Division of Enforcement.
Got it. And so the theory there would be, look, we've kind of telegraphed what's important to us, and to the extent that there are enforcement actions down the road, you know, that's not what's setting the tone. It's already, you know, market participants have been put on notice from the risk score. Is that about right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the idea of, you know, examination staff and enforcement staff sitting next to each other might be kind of a chilling visual. Certainly is for me.
That's how it works.
So, you know, we've been hearing a lot about the new climate and ESG task force at the SEC. What should clients be making of that?
The number one takeaway is that the SEC does not assemble a task force unless it is confident there will be enforcement cases for the task force to bring, right? It would just be egg on the face if they set up a task force and time goes by and more time goes by and more time goes by and the task force does not bring any cases. They will bring cases. They're not going to set up the task force unless they're confident they can bring those cases. And the SEC already has all the tools that it needs, right? The anti-fraud provisions of the Advisors Act are extraordinarily broad, even reaching negligence-based conduct. And short of a fraud case, the SEC can always focus on a firm's compliance policies and procedures, both whether they are reasonably designed in light of the firm's business, as well as their implementation.
So have we seen any enforcement actions yet, or is this kind of future looking?
Not by the task force, but one recent enforcement action gives us an indication of what such cases might look like. In September of 2020, the SEC brought settled administrative proceedings against Fiat Chrysler for disclosure violations related to its public descriptions of an internal review of emissions control systems in certain of its diesel vehicles. This was in the wake of the Volkswagen Dieselgate scandal, when the EPA fined Volkswagen for installing what were called defeat devices. That is, devices designed to defeat laboratory emissions testing in its vehicles in violation of the Clean Air Act. In any event, Fiat Chrysler issued a press release and an annual report, both of which stated that an internal review that they conducted found the company's vehicles complied with all environmental regulations concerning emissions. In other words, no Dieselgate scandal here, we're fine, right? Those statements were misleading in the SEC's view because they did not disclose that the internal review had been limited to whether the company had installed these defeat devices, like the ones Volkswagen had used, and was not, in fact, a comprehensive review of compliance with all emissions regulations, which, of course, is what they said it was, right? So the SEC found Fiat Chrysler had violated certain disclosure provisions of the Exchange Act and fined the company $9.5 million. So for our consideration now, in light of the fact that the ESG task force has been stood up by enforcement, the message of the case is pretty clear, and it's something you've been hearing from Debbie and Pat all day. If you speak on a subject, including ESG related matters, your disclosure must be complete and accurate. So for example, Debbie said earlier, if a manager makes representations regarding adherence to certain global ESG frameworks, it should have the policies and procedures to back it up. Or to underscore what Pat said, you know, say what you do, do what you say, and document it. Can't stress that enough.
Very helpful. Any other key takeaways for managers in this area?
I think if you want to know what an investigation would look like, it's going to be a little less, how do I put it? A little less granular than an exam, right? The enforcement division is going to take the big picture view of how a manager takes ESG into account in their investment strategies, what they tell their investors about that, you know, how they describe it or define their ESG considerations, if at all, whether investments in client portfolios are consistent with the manager's disclosures, and what work, if any, the manager can demonstrate that it did to ensure the accuracy of its ESG-related disclosures, including continuing diligence, right? Because enforcement's always looking from the perspective of what the investor is hearing or a reasonable investor is hearing, and may not get as granular as the exam staff, but they want to make sure, again, that you say what you do and you're doing what you're saying and that you can demonstrate that, right, on the most general level. It's also worth remembering, as Pat and Debbie have been saying today, that there are no defined terms yet. So managers may wish to define terms in their disclosures or use industry terms that they can adhere to and then stick to those definitions, because again, that would give a safeguard against a future enforcement action, right? You're taking some of the ambiguity out of your disclosures that way, and it can shorten an enforcement inquiry and it can save you from an enforcement action.
Fantastic. Yeah, so look, obviously a lot to process here. You know, the big takeaway for me here again was, you know, say what you do what you say and demonstrate it. And I think we've seen that throughout, and it's extremely helpful. Thank you all so much for listening. Really appreciate it. Thanks to the speakers. Very interesting and practical discussion. Please stay tuned for future ESG Spotlight discussions.